Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Refractive Thinker Radio Show, hosted by the award-winning and international best-selling author, Dr. Cheryl Lentz, the academic entrepreneur. Meet the scholars of the award-winning doctoral anthology series, The Refractive Thinker, where we focus on getting doctoral research off the coffee table and into the hands of business owners who can benefit from the results. Join us each Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time for 30 minutes of thought-provoking radio designed to discuss emerging topics in higher education and business. We will meet today's industry thought leaders and college professors leading the way. Details can be found at www.refractivethinker.com. Now, here's your host, Dr. Cheryl Lentz.
Good morning, everyone, and happy Tuesday. This is Dr. Cheryl Lentz, the academic entrepreneur, coming to you live from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And we have a wonderful show exciting for you for today. There's been something unique in the wind this week that I would love to be able to share with you. And the idea is this idea of the crisis for taking action. Many of us have people surrounding us that have the ability to talk a great deal, but they don't have the action to back up their talk. And by this I mean many of my students, for example, understand the rocking chair strategy. The rocking chair strategy means that we are busy rocking in our rocking chair or our glider, as it were, but that chair never moves forward. It's a difference between efforts and productivity. We're busy, but are we taking actual action to be able to move forward? I remember a coach I had who has written for us for the foreword for The Refractive Thinker, Volume 9, Sabrina Gibson, and she used to call it, she goes, Cheryl, you're an instant implementer. Part of it was that whenever what I was taking was a year-long business course with her to be able to focus on a variety of things, and I made sure that I set aside time to be able to do my homework. And I guess you can call me a very good student because she would teach us something. And part of my learning style is the ability that I have to do it right then. And so I would make sure that after class I would schedule an hour or two and then again throughout the week to be able to implement what she taught us. And I have a very specific strategy, and I still use it today. And I have a variety of checklists and things that I need to do in my calendar. Please forgive me, I have still a bit of a cold I'm recovering from. But anyway, we're looking at the ability is what do you do to actually take action? I am really surprised whether it's my students, whether it's my business coaching clients, whether it's myself as a business student when I have talked to various programs for which I am a student and in their coaching programs, and how many people will not only pay substantial amounts of money, I might add, anything, you know, anywhere from $2,500 up to $25,000, and they're still not willing to take action. And by action means that if you're going to be buying a coaching program, that you actually show up to the coaching program, meaning that you're actually on the weekly calls, the weekly seminars, and you're actually doing the homework. I am really shocked with the amount of people who will go to a conference and they're willing to take action to get to the conference. The conference teaches them something, but they're not willing to take action as a result of what they've learned. I have many people who are students who are struggling in their doctoral program because it was easier for them to be able to follow a pre-prescribed route, meaning if you're taking a class, we at the university or the faculty or both have created a here's your 8-week plan. And every week you are going to do this particular information and here are your assignments and here's what you have to be prepared for, whether in class or online. And most students can handle that because it's very specific deadlines that someone else created for them. When the student, however, transitions at the doctoral level or at the capstone level from classes to writing their master's thesis or their doctoral dissertation, now they become the person who sets the deadlines, who sets their schedule, their own personal private project manager, if you will. Somehow the disconnect happens. And I'm not convinced that it's just because you're a student. I've had people I've been in classes with. I have a business program I'm currently in that not everybody even shows up for their mastermind once a week. Many people just have, they don't safeguard that time. Everything tends to be more important. And then they struggle with the amount of success that they have. And part of it is that time gets away from them. They don't have a time management strategy where they know that every week they have specific things they have to do, and from this time to this time they block out time that here's the seminar, here's the time you need to be able to do your homework for the seminar, here's the mastermind time, here is the information that you want. And when people commit to things, I see a real lack of commitment. I mean, I'm torn between being excited that they're there in the first place, right? I mean, there's a difference between somebody being enrolled in a doctoral program and not being enrolled in a doctoral program, and they are in the game. But once they're in the game, I see a lack of commitment to finish the game. And again, I have set some records, as I've told you and shared with you over the years here on the radio show, that I've had three students at Walden University who graduated in less than 18 months. They were very motivated. I wish I would have had that opportunity, because it took me 4 years, 3 months to earn my doctoral degree. And part of it was simply the amount of program and how long time took between elements. Walden has a very prescriptive, and even many students still frustrate at it, but it has a, every time you're going to submit something except to the IRB, it's a two-week turnaround time. During my time, during my doctorate, it was almost a month turnaround time or longer between second committee and chairs, and you know, and the IRB is typically 6 weeks or longer. And so the idea is, what are you doing to make sure that you are as efficient as possible? What are you doing that you're willing to take action? And I must admit that I struggle when I have things that are on my list longer than they should be, particularly when I've been doing a lot of traveling. I was in Arizona for the week, and this week I played catch-up. I leave tomorrow for Chicago for a couple of days. I'll be back Friday at midnight. And so trying to simply make sure I meet all of my student obligations, my consulting obligations, my client obligations, doesn't leave much time for extra. And so it frustrates me when I have things that remain on my to-do list, or as I like to call it, my to-done list, longer than they need to. I am one who takes action, and most of my business coaches will often compliment me. It's like, Cheryl, you actually do what we say you need to do. And I look at them going, and? And I ask them, well, why is that such an unusual opportunity? Isn't that what I'm paying you for? And they kind of take a step back and smile. It's like, you think? And I'm one of these ideas that if I'm going to exchange my time and my money for a specific outcome, I'm going to be able to do the homework, because whether it's a certification program, whether it's an academic program, whether it's a business program, excuse me, I'm going to make sure that I'm getting my money's worth, as I do for my clients. Is that you're expecting X, Y, and Z. I am expecting to have that done with X, Y, and Z. But I have even many clients who tend to shift their obligations to me. And I look at them going, I work for them. I serve at their pleasure. So if they want me this week, that's great. If they don't need me for 2 or 3 weeks, that's their call. The challenge often becomes, however, is many are struggling with maintaining their commitment. And this is not judgmental. Please hear me. It's observational in the fact that we have a lot of things going on. I had several folks that I talked to this week. It's not that they don't want to, but when they're a mom or they're a single parent or they're just a parent and they have one child, three children, they have obligations at the church, at the school, for family, suddenly what they want to do and what they're able to do is very, very different. And I realize that. But part of it is you have to prioritize. And when you make a commitment is that you don't overcommit. There's only one commitment that I have in my life, or a particular book that I've been working on seemingly forever. And I was just talking to someone right before the show, indicating that it's driving me crazy. It's a book called Leadership Comes Softly. I've been working on it for darn near 5 years now. And I've written little pieces of it here and there. But the challenge really has become it's not soup yet. And for me, it's annoying because I never commit to something I'm actually not going to do. And in this case, no matter what I try, and it'll circle back and I'll do maybe a blog post about it, or it'll be relevant to something I'm teaching in class or something that's going on, but it just, the book hasn't come yet. And I have learned over time you can't push it. when it's soup, think about the idea you make a pot of soup, and most times that pot of soup, it doesn't taste as good as it does the second day. Why? It needs the soup, is what I call it, meaning all of the ingredients, all of the spices, all of the elements of the soup need to work together and stew a little bit and integrate and brew, almost like you're brewing a pot of tea. Is it takes time for these elements to work together, and that's why the first time you make soup, it's good, but it's better usually the next day or even the second day because it's had a chance to stand. It's had a chance to work together to make soup. And so this particular book, I just is not time. And I have written many books, 28 as of this show this morning, and so it's not that I lack the commitment. I have just learned there are certain books, it's not time. It's not soup yet. It needs to gel. It needs to solidify. There's something more, perhaps, that I need to learn before I can make this particular book happen. And so it's just kind of sitting there in the background. And so for many of my authors that I will offer advice to, there are ways to have a formulaic writing procedure, a to-do list, a time management system. You know, I'm a big systems proponent. But there are times when you have to realize that there are too many barriers in your way, too many obstacles, too many things that are pushing back, that you might need to listen to the universe and listen to yourself going, maybe this isn't the right time for this topic. Excuse me. And so I have learned, again, I've made every one of my other book commitments except for this one, and that just tells me that it's not time yet. And so I struggle with this idea of people making commitments and wondering, well, maybe it's not their right time. Maybe it's not the right commitment for them. But when you have a lot of money that's riding on the table, that you've hired a coach, you've committed to a doctoral program or a master's program, my concern is, are you giving it everything you've got? Are you willing to, since you've made that commitment, are you willing to see it through, take it the rest of the way? And I see a lot of people who really try, but they really fall short. I mean, I've seen many mastermind groups that I've been part of over the years, and some people I still keep track of from my mastermind groups, and others, I don't know what it is about that you schedule a specific time, and something always comes up. And it's not something, I mean, and it does for me too, although not as often. I mean, most of the time that I can't make my commitments, for example, I've missed two out of our current mastermind groups simply because I've been traveling. And when you're on an airplane, there's just no way to be able to, you know, make good at that particular time. And I'm not always in control of the time and when I fly because the commitment to the conference. And so there have been a couple, but not many. And the idea is I try and safeguard my time with my mastermind group every week. I think it's important. I made a commitment to them and to myself that I would be there. And it is important to my business and my accountability. And yet, there are many people in our group that other things are far more important. And they have to make peace with that because it frustrates them, because I can hear the frustration in your voice going, but I didn't get everything I needed to accomplish, and I didn't get this done, and my business isn't where it needs to be, and I have all of these things in their to-do list. And then we try and either justify or rationalize why we aren't having the success. And the success is a result of our commitment to action. And so, I have many authors who contact me who want to be able to parlay their part of their academic into a speaking career. And so let's look at the idea of focusing on their book. They have written the book, but very few people know about it. And there's over 300,000 more books every year that come out. And I was just talking to Brian Judd, who sits on my board of directors, a very well-accomplished author. And he quoted a statistic of over 92% of people never sell more than 50 books in their lifetime. And I knew it was low. I've heard the statistic most people sell an average maybe 300 books, but the fact there's a new statistic out, 92% of people never sell more than 50 books. And then they wonder why they lack the success is because they're you either have two choices. You either do it yourself, and the it being the marketing of your book, of yourself, of your branding to get the word out, or you hire someone to do it for you. People aren't willing to do either. And so they're very disappointed with their results. And I know that as a publisher because I have more than 130 or so folks that are part of the Refractive Thinker, and every once a year in the spring I write royalty checks. And for those who have been actively promoting their book, their topic, their information, many of them will earn a royalty check each and every year. Most authors won't. And it all depends on, well, why did you make the commitment? And some people will have a, well, here's why I came to the Refractive Thinker, is I wanted to publish my dissertation results. I wanted to be in an award-winning peer-reviewed journal. I wanted to keep my university happy. I wanted to have the, because most universities, particularly for doctoral scholar, require either that you publish once a year or once every 3 to 5 years. And so this was a check the box to keep the job, to make sure, particularly over your dissertation, you have the ability to share the results. Because my passion, as you have heard me over weeks and weeks and weeks, is the ability to get research out of the off the coffee table, out of academia, and into the hands of people who can actually use what research has found. Because to me, it's very frustrating when somebody spends all this time, and again, I spent 4 years, 3 months to earn my doctorate. I didn't want it to collect dust. I know people needed research because part of my research for my doctoral was participative management. And it was fascinating research. I replicated a study from MIT from Dr. Floyd, and it was fascinating what they found, what we found, and more importantly, what we didn't find. But the goal was I didn't earn my doctorate to simply buy the leather-bound book and let it collect dust on the coffee table. My dissertation is available on my website. It's available in ProQuest. I've written about it many, many times. And the idea is, how can my results help someone else? And that's really the function and the basis for the Refractive Thinker, is because I know most people aren't going to spend time with, what was mine, 200 pages or so? Very academic. And so we found another way to be able to keep it a timely, a executive synopsis when we use this anthology format. It's only 10 pages because we want to be able to pull it down from the academic IRB level to a user-friendly, business-friendly, audience-friendly, what did you find, why do you care, what are you going to do with the information, how does it make or save money? And most people will invest 10 pages where they won't invest, you know, 300 pages. And so we found a formula that works for having the ability to translate, what did you do? You spent all of this time doing doctoral level research to be able to have the ability to share your results and make a difference, make an impact. And that's really my goal for the Refractive Thinker, is how do we share this information in such a user-friendly format and to be able to avoid this willingness to take action. I know a lot of people who've talked about writing that book for years, and they haven't done it. And they haven't gone to that conference. They haven't presented their results, and they're very frustrated because when they have applied for many doctoral level positions, they don't have a lot of things on their CV that the universities are looking for. And the university is looking for publications in a peer-reviewed journal, some university-specific journals, a peer-reviewed book, a symposium, a colloquialism, a conference for which they can share their results to look at how can we get this information that we've spent so much time on, that we have become the expert to be able to get this information, again, out of academia. And so I think it really comes down to this willingness to take action. A lot of folks are willing to be able to make a commitment. It's the follow-through. It's the life gets in the way. It's the ability to, what do we do to take action? Because if we do, and I was talking with one of my board members yesterday, if we do what we've always done, we'll get what we've always gotten. I know it's a little bit poor grammar, but the sentiment is the same. Is if you're doing the same thing that you did last year that you're going to do next year, you're going to have the same results. And so the question becomes, what are you going to do differently that's going to change your course? How are you going to go to a different conference? I like to use the rule of three, and the fact that I like to do three different things per year. I usually work with a business coach. I usually present at a couple of seminars, write a couple of books, write a couple of articles, put things on LinkedIn, have unique projects that I'm part of. And so it really becomes an idea of, that's how I've built the resume I have with 28 different publishings. And they're different because I have one coming out from Animal Planet. because of my focus on my philanthropy, which is Siberian Husky Rescue New Mexico. And so I have a little bit that I do for the Siberian and the animal world, and I do a little bit for excuse me, for the academic world, and then I have things that I do for the business world. But it's all about how are we shaping the conversation. For example, the choice that we have for the Refractive Thinker for this year, the topic was chosen specifically for the women in leadership because of the presidential election. Ideally, we wanted to have the intellectual discussion about where women are as part of culture, industry, where are they as leaders, whether it's Fortune 500 CEOs, Fortune 1000 CEOs, nonprofit CEOs, global CEOs. And what I'm hoping someday is that we never have another gender conversation, is that we simply have a conversation about people doing amazing things, is that it shouldn't be, well, only women can do this or only men can do this. And there are some physicalities that limit some of these skills. There is an opportunity for not to have a conversation as a result of gender, but as a result of skill. And so part of what we're doing is, again, comes back to this willingness to take action. And so my drumbeat, as many of you hear me say, is the ability of what are you doing to shape the conversation? What are you doing to be able to leave the world a better place than where you found it? Because part of being a doctoral scholar, in my opinion, is having that responsibility for being in the elite. Only 1% or 1.4% of people ever earn their doctorate. And so the conversation is what are you doing as a result of it? Because here we are as the what Europe calls during World War II, when I was in Europe visiting and a keynote speaker at Rotary University in Poland. It was very interesting when I recall going to the courtyard where Hitler brought all of the what he called the intelligentsia, the medical doctors, the professors, the upper intellect of society, and he shot them all. And I still stay with that. Why? It's because the opportunity was we didn't want to have the smart people as part of the conversation because Hitler wanted to be in control. And it's far easier to control ignorance than it is to control people who are willing to question authority, who are willing to question results, who are willing to put ideas out there, because Hitler didn't want these ideas out there. He wanted people to blindly obey out of fear and coercion to achieve his vision. And it's very interesting that many rulers around the world still have that type of philosophy. It is far easier to control the ignorant than to educate them and to allow them to question authority to be able to change the conversation. And so that's what really I'm looking at, is that how can this information that is, I don't want it to be stuck in academia. I want that application. Why? Because academia is not supposed to be just an end. It's supposed to be a means to an end. We are the educators of the workforce, of people who will create new businesses, who will hire graduates as part of it. And so we're looking at that opportunity to be able to say, how are we doing in academia in terms of educating people and putting them in a position where they have the ability to meet the business owners' needs when they're hiring new employees? And that's why part of what I'm doing on at the Chicago Convention is looking at presenting about the conversation regarding of assessment. Because I believe the idea of assessment is, well, I'm interested in what my students have to say. I'm more interested in the business owners who hire my students. I'm more interested in the students who have created their own businesses as a result of what they have learned and their willingness to take action regarding this conversation. And so the idea is, how are we making sure that the skills that new businesses need, I mean, everyone's heard about STEM and the science and the lack of available technical skills that we're going to need in 20 years in this country and around the world to be able, excuse me, be able to shape that conversation of having enough technically skilled people to meet the needs of a boarding culture and population and the needs of business. And so it's not that I don't want to talk about what my students find are important, but I want to find out is, do they have the right skills? Are businesses hiring them? Do they have what is needed? Because I get beat up all the time by businesses who tend to think, well, you know what, I am spending a lot of time and money having to retrain folks who either didn't pay attention in school. And again, it's an idea of some of my students in the last 7 years seem to think that a C or a D is good enough. But when they get to the business world, it's not good enough for a promotion. It's not good enough to hit the ground running, and many business owners are having to re-educate those who have supposedly sophisticated degrees, whether it's undergrad, master's, or doctorate. And so we're looking at the ability, and again, the crisis of the willingness to take action. Is academia responding to what business owners need? And we need to have them a part of the conversation. Are business owners hiring our particular graduates? What skills do they need? What skills are they deficient in? And the willingness of the student to be able to take the action to master those skills. I can tell you it's been a big shift where it seems the minimum has become good enough. And many of my students have come back to me over the years because they were short on time, short on commitment, and a lot of things that they weren't doing their best in school. And they became C students with a, I just want to get the degree because I want to get the job. But then they realized when they got the job, they didn't have the mastery of the skills the job required. And so many of them realized that their inability and their non-willingness to take action and to perform at the high levels in schools affected their job promotion. So many of them are coming back to some type of either business training, academic certification, to be able to, well, I want that job. And the leaders and positions who are hiring for those jobs are measuring the skill levels of what is required. And if you're not willing to be a master in your craft, it may not prove fruitful for the idea of promotion. And so I at least want to make sure that I'm doing everything that I can to give my students the tools they need. I can take a horse to water, I can't make them drink, but I'd like to be able to make them thirsty. I'd like them to be able to want to be able to succeed. And not just at the, well, all I have to do is pass the class. And while that may be true, is that enough to master the skills the class was supposed to teach you so that you can take those skills into the workforce? For many of my students, it wasn't. It isn't. And many of the business owners come to me, suggest going, well, they earned a degree. It's like, yes, they did, but how well did they do a degree? Are they an A student or are they a C student? And how are we going to continue to shape the conversation? Because many degrees are not having the outcomes the business owners wanted. They want to know that when they hire a student with an MBA or a DBA or whatever their degree may be, is that their ability to do what their degree says they can do, the willingness to take action to be mastered of what they were supposedly studying instead of only being mediocre. And so it's the same thing that I see with a lot of folks. If you're going to make a commitment, have a commitment to excellence, not to mediocrity. Make sure that when you're going to decide you're going to hire a business coach, you're going to be part of a mastermind group, you're going to be part of a degree program, that you show up and that you do more than what's required. You're exchanging your time, your investment, your commitment for that exchange of information and knowledge that could potentially help you, but you have to master it. And that's what business owners are looking for. They're not looking for simply someone who holds just any MBA degree. They want to have you prove that you have those skills that an MBA says you have, because they're hiring your skills and you to be able to help their company. And if you only have a degree and a piece of paper, but you didn't go to school that day, you didn't master those skills, that's not helpful to the business, and that won't be helpful to either your career or your mastery. So let me invite you to be able to take a look at the commitments that you're making and whether or not it's perhaps you've overcommitted or that your willingness to take action, because our goal is to be able to be productive, to be efficient, to be effective, not simply to be in a rocking chair and be busy, 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 So I'd like to be able to invite you to simply examine what you're doing and why you're doing it, and whether or not your actions are going to be in line with your expectations. So my name is Dr. Cheryl Lentz. Thank you for joining me each and every week as we focus on another thought-provoking topic. I want you to keep looking at some of the things you do and why you do them, and keep thinking your way to success, because success can come with practice and commitment. And I'm here to be able to help share with you some of those best practices to help you along your way. Again, my name is Dr. Cheryl Lentz. I'm the academic entrepreneur. Join us every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. for a thought-provoking 30 minutes to help you move forward in your career. Keep thinking your way to success. Come join us at therefractivethinker.com. I'm Dr. Cheryl Lentz at drcherylentz.com. Have a fabulous week. We'll see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.